danger is stealing in as relapse hums above the din. It's hard to know if this will be the day when you give in. Give in. Give in. Give in.
Hello and welcome to episode 287 of the Thinking Poker Podcast. From Baltimore, Maryland, I'm Andrew Brokus, joined by Nate Mavis in Melrose, Massachusetts.
Yes. Greetings. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Chugging along.
Good to hear it. So we had a guest lined up for today, and he ended up having to drop out at the last minute. I don't see a lot of reason to say who it was just yet. Most likely we will have the person on the air and he'll get a chance to talk about it. It's interesting. It's related to what makes him an interesting person, the reason he had to drop out at the last minute. But I'll save the surprise on that for the time being. So this will be that's good news for some folks and bad news for others, but this will be a straight set strategy segment between Nate and myself. I don't know, is there anything we should talk about before we get into the strategy?
No, I mean, things will arise, I'm sure. So exactly. Let's just get into the strategy, and then, you know, if we digress, we digress.
Yeah, we have a way of digressing.
Yeah.
We should tell people, and this is not a digression, this is strategy discussion. If you want more sweet, sweet strategy, tournamentpokeredge.com is the place to get it. You can hear lots of me and some of Nate, plus a lot of other people who have been former guests on the show and some really great players who have not yet been guests on the show on Tournament Poker Edge. Hundreds of hours of videos there. You get access to the full library, as little as $25 a month. TournamentPokerEdge.com to sign up. Our strategy question, the first one anyway, we'll see how much time we have. Our strategy question comes to us from... We're getting there.
Chris.
From Chris. Chris says, "Hello, Andrew, and hopefully Nate." You're in luck, Chris. Nate is here.
Yes.
"First of all, thanks again for keeping up the great podcasting and for reviewing a few of my hands years ago, which I don't think I ever took the opportunity to thank you for. I've got another hand played recently that I've discussed with a few very smart players and gotten wildly different answers, so I'm really curious as to what the Thinking Poker crew thinks. It's a 2-5 game at the Isle Casino in Pompano Beach, Florida. Just opened around 30 minutes ago. No real info on villain. He hasn't shown down any hands. He's probably around 30 to 35 years old. Don't think he's a pro. We're $1,000 effective. Here's the hand. One player limps. Villain raises to $20. Folds to me in the small blind. I have ace-king offsuit." We don't have positions on these players, which would be relevant for a lot of hands. Honestly, I think pretty much regardless of position, I want to be 3-betting ace-king offsuit here. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario, whatever positions we put these players in, that I wouldn't want to 3-bet ace-king off. Agreed?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe I will complicate this a little bit. I would be a lot more excited to have ace-king suited, given that we're 200 big blinds deep. In a 100 big blind game, ace-king offsuit is a slam dunk 3-bet. There's somewhat less value in 3-betting it when you're this deep, because even in a 3-bet pot, you're still going to end up with a higher stack-to-pot ratio than you really want. And ace-king offsuit is going to, like, even when you flop top pair, which it's hard to do better than that with ace-king offsuit, but even when you flop top pair, you're a little deep to just kind of stack off on a lot of board textures, which can make things tricky. That said, you still benefit a lot from fold equity. You're still going to be in good shape against calling ranges, and especially given that if you call, this is likely to be a multi-way pot. I do think you want a 3-bet anyway, but it's definitely a less exciting 3-bet than if we were... Then if we were only 100 big blind deep. But I think if you call, there's a good chance, like, the big blind comes in, the limper comes in, and now you're, like, out of position in a 4-way pot with ace-king offsuit, which is not too appealing, and you haven't generated any fold equity.
That is correct. I think a pretty elementary point, but a super important one, is that if you start taking ace-king out of your 3-betting range, like, it's so much harder to play against a range that is strong and also has ace-king in it than a range that has a bunch of strong hands and for whatever reason does not have ace-king in it. Like, and this is just, I think it's a it's a very old lesson. It's something that a lot of us learn early on. But like, if you do any kind of analysis, if you like really break down combinations and hands, like it's just really a lot tougher to play against a strong range that is not, for whatever reason, just calling with ace king.
Well, so I would definitely still 3-bet ace king suited, and I think I would probably 3-bet some other hands that would fill that gap. Like, I just like the hands that I would be 3-betting would be a little more oriented towards suited and connected things, and a little less oriented towards big cards, which is what ace king offsuit is. So I think at least some of what you're driving at is the importance of not just having a lot of big pairs in your 3-betting range, so that when there's not an ace or a king on the board, your range is, you know, like there's some weaker hands in your range essentially, and that's. I think that role will often be better filled. Like, so like when you're shallow, ace king off is a decent bluffing hand even when you don't hit a pair, because if you do turn a pair, you end up with a hand you can stack off with, which is not true when you're this deep. And I think often to fill that same role, I would rather have like a 8-7 suited kind of hand, where if I am when I'm bluffing with that hand on the flop, I have potential to turn, you know, draws, straights, flushes, which is what I'm more interested in making at this kind of stack depth.
I agree, but like, you're thinking about your range. I'm saying you sometimes run up against opponents, and this is maybe more true years ago than it is now, who have a tight 3-betting range, and then also when they see ace-king, they're like, I don't want to play that out of position this deep. And so they just end up with a tight range that does not have unpaired hands in it, or not many. And like, those people are really easy pickings.
Absolutely.
And ironically, like, much, much easier. Like, to be playing deep stacked in position against somebody who pretty much only has big pairs, it's just like the easiest way to make money. it's like so hard not to. It's like, really, it's you can't lose. You just can't lose. Like, it's like,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So the one thing that the hero does make it 80, the limper folds, and the villain calls. Now, in terms of, you know, what the villain's calling range looks like, this is the case where it would be relevant to know his position. You know, we should expect that his range would be a good deal stronger if we'd seen like under the gun limp, under the gun one makes it 20, and then we make it 80, as opposed to like hijack limps, button makes it 20, we make it 80. You know, then when the villain calls, his range would be a good deal wider if he was on the button than if he were like under the gun one. But we'll just go on the information that we have here.
Yeah. I mean, maybe make the hypothesis that the limper is early middle-ish, and then the razor is something like middle position or late middle. Like, hope that he would have told us, hope that our correspondent would have told us if it had been particularly early or particularly late.
Yeah, that's
But it does, it makes a huge, it makes a very big difference.
So as it happens, we go to the flop, $165 in the pot, and we get one of those rare flops where ace-king offsuit does a little bit better than top pair. The flop is queen-jack-10 rainbow.
Huh, it's a good flop.
Good flop. Favorable, as
favorable.
Poker personalities might say. $165 in the pot, and I guess 920 in the effective stack, so we're looking at a stack-to-pot ratio of 5-ish. Bet, check.
Well, let's see. Do you want to have a checking range? Like, yeah. I mean, I think you want to have a betting range, right?
Right.
And I think the nuts, like nut straights, are generally good hands to have in a betting range. If you wanted to check some nuts combinations, I might choose ones like the ace-king. There should be 3 ace-king suiteds with backdoor flush draws.
Yeah.
Those would be obvious ones to put in the checking range first. So I would definitely have a betting range. And I think this hand should go in the betting range. So I would bet. I think you want to give yourself a pretty good price on your bluffs, but you also want to threaten stacks with your bluffs. So I might bet, you know, like 70% pot. That sound about right?
Yeah, I think we do want to use a large size when we're betting here. This is a board, and I think you're also right that we want to have a checking range here, partly because there are some hands that should just be checking and giving up. Like, had we 3-bet with 6-5 suited, which I might do with the stack depth, they're starting like 8-7 suited, I would not want to bet this flop. Like, I think it's very likely that the villain got a pretty decent chunk of this board. You know, like, his regardless of what position he's in, his calling range should have a lot of Broadway cards in it, which means he's going to flop some sets, he's going to flop some two pairs, he's going to flop some pair plus straight draw, he might even occasionally flop straights. There's just not a lot of ways for him to really whiff this board hard. You know, he probably has some smaller suited connectors in his range that miss. He has some underpairs. He has some hands that are, like, not that great, like Jack 8 suited or something might be in his range. So, I mean, he has some stuff that's not that good on this board, but I don't think just, like, firing once here with zero equity is going to be very profitable. So I definitely think we're going to have some hands that are checking with the intention of giving up. I think there's also hands that are pretty good on this board, and this might be a little more surprising or controversial for some people. I think there are some hands on this board that we can have that are not actually interested in playing very large pots or want to see the turn before they decide whether to play very large pots. And I'm thinking here of ace queen, maybe even pocket aces and pocket kings, I think make pretty reasonable checks on this flop. Like, if you imagine if you have pocket aces and you bet and your opponent raises, how good do you feel about that? Or you bet and your opponent calls, there's a ton of bad turn cards for you. So I think a lot of people tend to just kind of bet in these situations where they know that their hand is, like, vulnerable, and all they're really doing is just hoping that their opponent folds. But the thing is, when your opponent folds, you were probably going to win the pot anyway with those hands. So, like, betting with ace-queen, like, it feels good because you're stressed when you see that flop. You're like, oh, crap, there's so much that could go wrong. I might be behind already. Like, I just want this to be over. Please just fold. And people bet. But I don't think that's the best way to approach that decision. So, yeah, I think we do want to have a checking range here. You know, it's kind of mundane to say if we were to look in, like, Pyosauver, this would probably be a mix. But that's not a very interesting answer. And truthfully, even when Pyosauver tells you that something is a mix, it's often going to be better for you to implement a pure strategy based on some guess about how your opponent is going to play. That said, I mean, when it comes to the nuts, there may be some reasons to actually mix, but I think you're right that, you know, backdoor flush draws would be the thing most likely to motivate a check. So it's pretty hard to go wrong by betting here, and I do think we want to use a large size when we bet, because we're going to have so many hands in our betting range, even sets, where we're not that excited to get called. Like, it's going to be possible. Like, I mean, this is a relatively dynamic board, or at least there's some turns that are going to be pretty dynamic, and that's going to give some reward to the imposition player. So we do want to charge him a price for getting to play the turn in position against us, including even with ace king. Like, there's going to be some turn cards that might make life a little tricky for ace king, like if the board pairs. Certainly if we have a set, there's going to be some turn cards that make life tricky. There's a number of cards that make straights very plausible. So we do want to charge the villain a price because he's going to have an advantage playing on later streets given his position. And I think you're right that when we do bet, we want to use a larger size.
Yep.
To his credit, Chris bets 110 into 165, which I think is right in the neighborhood of what we're thinking would be a good size.
Yeah, that's good.
And the villain calls. How much do you read into the fact that he's calling rather than raising? Do you think that's his range?
I think a lot of villains will raise right away with ace king. But also, many will just call. Yeah, like thinking that they might scare away aces or kings by raising. But, like, the stacks are deep, so he really, like, he does need to get the money in the pot. I mean, I do think, I wouldn't say it caps his range. He can have, like, a bunch of very strong hands here. However, there are so many hands that really don't want to raise, like Jack 10. But, kind of, like, I don't think he's just folding the flop with two pair, correct?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you're also right. Raising Jack 10 would be pretty bad.
It would be very, very bad, right?
But I mean, like, there are people who will do it. Like, there are people who just see the absolute strength of their hand and they're like, well, I have two pair and there's draws on the board, so I better raise.
Can you beat aces? Yes. Right. No, I mean, some people will, but, like, there are just so many of those. There's, like, the Jack 10. And again, this gets back to preflop a little bit, but, you know, between all the sets and probably a lot of two pair, like, PS Queen Jack, there's a lot of two pair he can have, probably a bunch of sets he can have, like, probably this deep. That's the other thing. It's like, this deep, is he four betting queens before the flop? I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's another where position matters a little bit. Like, I'd be more likely to do it as the button than as the under the gun, too.
Yeah. So, no, I wouldn't say he's capped. Do you think he's capped?
No. Well, I guess the one exception being Ace King. Like, I think there's a decent chance Ace King four bets pre. There's a decent chance Ace King raises the flop. Like, I think Ace King, but given how passive he's been, or given the fact that he's passed up raising at two opportunities, I think Ace King can be pretty strongly discounted from his range, but I don't know how much that matters. Because I think you're right. There's a lot of, I mean, I think his range is real heavy in sets, two pairs, and pair plus draw, whether that's pocket kings, king queen, pocket nines, 10-9. I mean, those low straight draws are worth a lot less, because even if, like, if you do have 10-9 and a king comes, like, congratulations. You know, you've got the low end of a straight where an ace makes a higher straight than yours, and you're in a three bet pot. Like, there's a pretty good chance someone has an ace. So there's not a lot of value in drawing to that nine. But at the same time, like, people aren't folding 10-9 on this flop, I think, regardless of whether they should. So I think there's a fair number of just like all those Broadway things that sort of wrap around this board, whether that's two pair, set, pair plus straight draw. I think all that stuff is very much in his range. Most of it's not raising. Even like pocket tens, I think a lot of people are, you know, correctly not raising on this flop. Like, I don't think it's a very exciting time to raise tens, because it's very easy to get your money in very bad by raising with tens. Yep. And I don't think a lot of very good things happen when you raise with tens.
No, you fold out ace queen. Good.
Turn, $385 in the pot, is an offsuit deuce.
It's a good turn.
Yeah. Any turn that doesn't, well, yeah, I guess what we're really looking to fade, first, we want to fade board pairs. Secondly, we want to fade anything that makes the board straighter than it already is. So, you know, kings, aces, nines, eights, all those are kind of bad cards for us since we already have the straight. Whether that would improve the villain to a chop or whether it would just make the board scarier for him, in any event, that's going to be bad. So,
queens, the worst card, fills up the most two pair probably that he's going to have. Yeah, plus all the sets. Wow. I would bet again, because I will two barrel here sometimes, and we have the nuts, and we don't want to, like, let him off for free when he has king jack and he peeled. Like, he's just going to check behind here, and we don't want that to happen. I think we can choose a smaller size with both bluffs and value bets. I'd probably bet like half the pot, or does that give up the chance to get all the money in?
Well, I mean, you're allowed to bet whatever you want on the river. And we wouldn't anyway. I mean, if you bet 200 now, there'll be 785 in the pot and a good deal less than, like, the stacks will be, like, 650-ish or something. So, I mean, you'll have less than a pot-size bet even if you bet half pot now.
That's right. Sorry, calculation error. Yeah, bet half the pot. It's a good bluff size, yeah.
That said, I mean, I think there's, especially against some types of opponents, I know we don't have a lot of read on this villain, so I'm just kind of putting this out there as a consideration generally. This is a pretty appealing spot to check raise all in, I think. And I can see us having some other hands that might want to do that as well, including maybe some semi-bluffs. It would be, you know, I call this an offsuit deuce. Chris didn't actually tell us the suit. So, like, especially if this deuce puts a flush draw on the board where we could have a hand like ace-five suited that just turned a flush draw and also has a gut shot, you know, that's the kind of hand I might be tempted to try to check raise all in with.
I
think there's a case for having a check raise all in range, and I think given what we were saying about the villain, you're potentially just calling the flop, or you're probably just calling the flop with a lot of, you know, two pair and set kinds of hands. Part of the reason he's flatting the flop with those is the concern of already being beat. Part of it is the concern of, like, how easily he could be drawn out on. So those hands are a little more likely to show aggression on such a blank turn, especially if we check. Like, I think a lot of people, I mean, it's probably correct for the villain to check behind hands like queen jack and jack 10, but I think a lot of people don't have it in them to do that. I think a lot of people are going to take it as a green light to bet. They're going to think, okay, that's a safe turn card. My opponent checked. I don't really want to see the next card. I want to bet now. I think rightly or wrongly, a lot of people are going to bet when check two, and the stacks are really nice for check raising all in. Versus if we bet, I don't think it's very likely that the villain raises, which means we are going to have to go to the river. And even if the villain does have a set or two pair, there's a lot of rivers that are either going to pair the board or at least make the board such that the villain chooses not to pay us off with that hand. You know, the river is an ace or a king or a nine, and, you know, we don't get paid by a set.
Yep. That's really good. That's really good. I'll say that in a live context, the physical read matters a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty rare 2-5 opponent who can just call this flop in a 3-bet pot with a hand like King Jack, or, you know, that, like, he kind of has to call, or he thinks he has to call, but he's worried about it. Like, it's a pretty rare opponent who's not going to give anything off when he's doing that, as opposed to when he's calling with a set. Mm-hmm. And some of them will, but, like, in practice, I think a live read almost always gets into my decision-making here.
I like that. As it happens, Chris bets 250, which is, I think, in the neighborhood of what we're thinking is good if we're going to bet, and the villain calls. So we go to the river with 885 in the pot, 550 in the effective stacks, and the river's another deuce. So the final board is Queen Jack 10 Rainbow, deuce, deuce. I'm guessing a backdoor flush draw didn't come in, or Chris probably would have mentioned that at least. So Queen Jack 10, deuce, deuce, 885.
Well, if there wasn't a flush draw on the flop, then there's not a flush now.
Well, there could have been. It could be backdoor.
Not. The two deuces can't be the same color. They can't be the same suit.
Fair enough. Yes. Okay. You win.
Yeah.
So what do you think now? We were hoping that the board would not pair. It did pair, but this was the most innocuous way for it to pair. Like, you know, the queen pairing, I think, would be a much. I would have an easier time check folding if the queen had paired. With the deuce pairing and with only 550 in the stacks, I'm pretty tempted to just shove.
It's tough. One problem is that, like, Jack 10's going to have a real hard time calling now. Like, and really any two pair will. Although, yeah, like, are you really going bet with aces and kings? Yeah, it's that's tough. So it's going to be hard to fold. But, like, a lot of these, a lot of these opponents are going to let you off the hook so much. Like, check fold looks really good, honestly. Like, how many of these guys, like, how often are you getting bluffed? Like, a lot of these guys are going to check back with ace-king, like, with a chop. can you block all that? I don't know. I mean, in theory, like against Snowy, I jam. In a 2-5 game, I check and make a live read. There you go. I'm old.
I like how I'm using the school wiggle answer, which is, it's a mix, and you're using the old school wiggle answer of make a read.
Yeah. It's a mix. I just decide what the mix is.
I think, like, check calling is not real appealing to me because it's hard for me to think of what hands he's shoving. Like, the reason to check call would really just be to induce bluffs, and I don't know what's turning into a bluff if we check. I mean, maybe, like, King Jack, King 10? Even those, though, doesn't seem that likely to me. I mean, I just think this doesn't strike me as a situation where people are real likely to bluff when checked too. There's not a lot of obvious misdraws he can have that don't also have a pair with them, which, even if that pair doesn't really have that much showdown value, I think a lot of people, their inclination is just to, like, check back if they have a pair. And, you know, especially in a large pot like this. I think if we're going to get value, like, if we're going to put the 550 in the pot, I feel like I'd rather do it by shoving, and if we don't feel like putting another 550 in the pot, then we can, and, you know, checking is not giving up. Like, I think we often win when we check. It's just like, if the bet does go in there, I mean, obviously reads are a thing, but my like default would probably be to fold.
If he had ace king, he probably would have shoved. Like for me, a big reason to check is, like, not wanting to get bluffed out of half the pot. But, like, if he had ace king, he would have told us on the turn, I think.
Right, yeah, ace king puts it in on the turn, if not on
the And 2-5, I don't know. I'm old, but I kind of just want to check and probably fold, but maybe call if he bets. Like, I don't know. Like, check and win. I don't know. Like, it's different. Like, if you think he's going to pay you off with king queen ever, then definitely bet. Like, but did he really get there with king? Like, and so much depends on the read. Like, who peels this turn with king queen without giving something away 200 deep at a in a three bet pot in a 2-5 game? Everybody gives something off, me included. I don't know, it's such a read dependent spot.
Part of the reason I don't like putting money in here is we're like really unblocking the hands we don't want to see, and we're blocking the hands we do want to see.
So check and fold. Save your $500. You can buy a lot with $500.
That's really how I'm leaning, is check and fold or shot. I think I like check calling the least, which is bad news for Chris because that's what he did.
Well, how do you feel about like betting $100 in a 2-5?
I think that's. Oh, there's a pretty strong case for that, actually. It's not really something I would try to do against, you know, Snowy or better players.
Oh, no. just throw a black chip out there. See what happens.
Yeah, people are going to struggle to fold. They're certainly just to fold, like, king-queen, but even, like, king-jack probably struggles to fold for 100.
And they're going to, like, are they going to bluff shove? Are they going to turn king-queen into a bluff?
They are
not. Like, over $100? Yeah. That's my new answer. Bet $100.
Yeah, I'm my new answer. I'm sold.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chris does check call, and his comments, really not sure about the river decision. Do you think I should just be shoving? Not sure what worse hands he could have to call with here. Maybe 8-9 suited, but I feel like he might raise the flop or turn with that. Could you ever find a check fold? What about just betting like 200 to 250 and hoping not to face a raise, which I think is in line with what you're saying. And I think I do like, Nate, your sizing better than this. Like, if you're going to bet something, I'd rather keep it on the blatantly small side than an amount that, even though it's a pretty small fraction of the pot, just like in live game, like in a 2-5 game, 200 still feels like a lot. And I think you're less likely to get the shrug call for 200 than you are for a single chip.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And especially, like, mostly I just want to block the stuff that, but yeah, but like blocking isn't that important because it's not betting that. Yeah, bet 100. I like it. Bet 100. Or like 85. That's sort of a read thing. Like, the read is whether to bet like 92 or 100. I guess you can't bet 92 in most 2-5 games. But yeah. Yeah, bet is small.
And so the last thing Chris says is, certainly willing to discuss further in correspondence. Please let me know if you have any further questions. So, I mean, obviously it would have been ideal if I had done, like, looked at this in advance and realized that we didn't have information, like, what position the villain was in and written to him. But that's not how I do things. So, details that, don't count on me to have follow-up or have time to ask you follow-up questions. And I'm not saying it's a big deal that we didn't have that information. Like, we can certainly just discuss the hypothetical of what we would do in various ways. But yeah, when you're submitting hands, just, you know, try to include all the information that you want us to discuss, because I typically pull these things out to discuss like 15 to 20 minutes before we record.
Yep.
But thank you for writing, Chris. And sorry to say, results, villain did have pocket tens for a full house. Did not work out well for Chris, but hopefully it was something of a learning opportunity. You got a lot of money in good, and then, I mean, I know it feels bad because it was a large bet that went in bed on the river, but, you know, as a fraction of the pot, you know, you don't need to win that often on the river, and you put money in pretty good on earlier streets. So I would not sweat it terribly much. Like, this is in a lot of ways a cooler.
Yep.
We do have another question. I think we have a little bit of time to discuss it. And this one is coming from Carl, who says, "Hi guys, hope you're both well. Life is starting to get in the way of me playing online MTTs, so I'm looking to transition to online cash where I can play for a few hours and not be tied into a long time commit. I'm looking for some pointers on where to start with study, games, and buy-ins. I'll most likely play on Stars and have been experimenting with Full Ring, Six Max, and Zoom. I have landed on playing at 25.50 for the time being, and with little cash-specific study, seem to be handling that okay. I remain a recreational player looking to have some fun and win a few bucks. I'd like to move up stakes a little, but no plans for nosebleeds or being a pro. What book should I be reading? What game would you suggest starting at? What training site offers the best low-stakes cash game training? What would you set as a realistic win goal? Any other advice? Thanks, Fat Harry Potter, a.k.a. Carl."
Fat Harry Potter. Long time listener.
I'm glad he wrote that, because I was pretty sure this was Fat Harry Potter, but I didn't want to get it wrong. If this wasn't Fat Harry Potter, I feel like that could be insulting to both Carl and Fat Harry Potter. So I'm glad that at the end of the email he confirmed that he is in fact Fat Harry Potter.
Yeah. And just, like, more generally, like, if you're a long-time commenter, like, I'm going to get in trouble by not knowing everybody, but, like, you know, we know and love you guys. Like, I don't know, if you're Ian Rapley, you don't have to tell me who you are. You've been listening forever. You tweet at us. You're awesome. We love you. So, yeah. We know who you are, for the most part, long-time Thinking Poker Nation people. And if you're not a long-time Thinking Poker Nation person, that's great, too. But, yeah, no need to, you know, as long as you aren't too offended if I either forget or somehow never knew, yeah, you can just say, like, hey, I'm Fat Harry Potter, and I will remember plenty of things about you.
So I'm not... I don't have fantastic answers to this, because I'm not real keyed in on the online cash game situation anymore. I mean, I do think Stars, especially Zoom, those games are tough. Like, I have a student who showed me recorded a session of playing at, like, I think it was 2 cent, 5 cent Zoom. I mean, it was really small stakes, and the play was not that bad. Like, I was expecting, like, I mean, there were some people who were doing some pretty good things. My most recent experience playing Zoom, I think, was in 2017. So, like, September of 2017 was the last time I played Zoom, and I felt like I was just kind of holding my own at 1-2. Like, I'm not sure that I was winning that much playing at 1-2. Yeah. And this is partly a function of them increasing the rake and decreasing rake back, which, I mean, both immediately takes more money out of the game, but also drives some of the players that I was probably beating before out of the game. So, like, the ecosystem gets, like, all around tougher in addition to more money coming out of it. But, I mean, honestly, like, 25, 50 cents strikes me as actually an ambitious place to start if you're just getting into online cash and you're playing Zoom on Stars. I think the non-Zoom games are a good deal softer than the Zoom games at the same stake. So, you know, depending on how much you care about the getting in a lot of hands versus just, you know, playing softer for the same amount of money, you'd probably be a little better off with full ring or six max. But I would suggest probably starting smaller than this.
Yeah. I have, like, a meta bit of advice, which is, like, focus almost entirely on getting as good as possible for a little while. And it's great to have market win rates and things like that, and you definitely need to keep track of what your win rate is. But I think a lot of people get a little too invested in, like, the study plan and the improvement plan and not enough in the actual doing of it. So, like, I would say, you know, like, don't spend a lot of time researching what the best attainable win rates at 10 cent, 25 cent Zoom is or whatever. Like, I would probably just take a few hours and then just play a bunch of 2 cent on Zoom where the play is going to be okay. And then, like, you also, and the great thing about Zoom is that you lose the crutch of, like, oh, I had a read, you know? And don't get me wrong, you need reads, but, like, there's only player pool reads. And that's really good. That's really good because, like, every hand kind of takes place in a vacuum. Or at least in zone on Bovada, I guess. Do you get screen names?
Yeah, you do get screen names. And I think the player pool is such that you are going to see a fair number of regulars, especially because the regulars are going to be playing four tables and the reds will often be playing only one or two. So my experience playing only a little bigger than this on Zoom is that you will see a fair number of familiar faces.
Yeah, okay, so you do have some reads, but, like, not as many. I would get into a game that, like, you can probably tread water in, but is not easy, and then I would just play and try to play well. Then take the hands and study them hard, and, like, don't just choose big pots. Choose the, like, flop decisions you aren't totally sure on, and then just take a while and study. That's my view. As far as books, I think there are a lot of good books, but in terms of, like, serious study, probably a good training site is a better value per hour and value per dollar. TPE sponsors the show, but I do think they're good. But if you're not doing tournaments, Run It Once is fabulous. It's expensive, but, like, the value is really good. 1 month of Run It Once is probably worth more than 4 months of other sites, if you really study properly. So, yeah, but, like, I would just really, really study. Like, actually when you think about a hand, like, actually go back to it. Don't just save the hand history. Like, really study. Really do it. Don't worry as much about, like, you know, like, oh, am I starting my sessions at 10:15 a.m. when 10 a.m. would be better? Like, you know, like, all that meta stuff, like, comes after improving at, like, the actual cards itself. So, that would be my advice.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this. I think most people have heard my thoughts on, like, goal setting or what kinds of goals to set in the past, but it's really hard for me to see, like, even if I could give you an answer, like, you should be winning your goal should be 5 big blinds per 100. Like, it's hard for me to see how that would change your behavior in any way. Like, obviously, you just want to try your best to win as much as you can. And I mean, it's maybe, I guess I could kind of see it motivating, like, when should I move up, or, you know, what should my win rate be before I move up in stakes or something like that, which I don't really have a great answer for either. But yeah, I think that's kind of the wrong thing to worry about. I think your advice there is, and I don't know that he is worrying about it. It was just one of, like, five questions that he asked. But yeah, I mean, I think winning at all in these games is impressive, especially if you're not a professional poker player, which Carl isn't, and he's just, you know, getting started in cash. I think winning period and having bankroll, you know, essentially, like, if you're beating the game you're currently playing and you know what kind of bankroll you need to play the bigger game, then, you know, you play the game you're currently playing until you have the bankroll to play the bigger game. And then if you don't feel like you're winning in the bigger game, you go back down to the game that you can beat until you've gotten better and you take another shot at the bigger game. Like, I don't know that the win rate factors into decision making that much.
Yep. I mean, like, at the end of the month, if you look back and your win rate is low or negative, then you should try to get better, right? And if you look at the end of the month and, like, you're not running that great in all-in pots, but your win rates are competitive with those of, like, really successful players, then, you know, good. Like, but that's mostly a matter of, like, guiding your study. And it's like, I don't know, it's like, it's like, if you come to believe that you're not winning that much, then you should be looking for big leaks. And if you come to believe that you're good, like, that maybe you have fewer big leaks, then you start to worry about other kinds of optimization. It's like, do I think I have a lot of oil buried in my backyard or a little oil buried in my backyard? That affects, like, where you drill, right? So it's mostly stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah. I'll say, I don't expect a big win rate. I'll say that much. Like, I think if you're winning a couple big blind per 100, that's good. Like, I don't think you're even cracking 5. I mean, I guess I'm getting into some specifics now. Like, I think you're unlikely to crack 5.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard.
In terms of books, like, I mean, I'm not real up to date with the current books. I think you're right that generally training sites are going to be a better investment. I do like Matt Janda's No Limit Hold'em for advanced players. I think there's some interesting theoretical stuff there that, I mean, like, that's the one thing that a book does that videos don't often do, is just kind of lay out big picture theoretical things. And I think Janda's pretty good for that. Other than that, I don't have a lot in the way of book recommendations. I agree. You know, obviously, I'm a big fan of Tournament Poker Edge. I think some of my videos on Tournament Poker Edge are not tournament specific or not very tournament specific. And you know, Carl knows how to reach me if he wants recommendations on which of those to do. But yeah, if you're really looking to do cash seriously, you know, I'm not familiar with all the offerings. Like, I don't really know what Doug Polk's offerings look like. I imagine they're good. So I don't know how to compare that to Run It Once. I you have been a member of Run It Once in the past. I think Run It Once is very good. I think that especially now that they've changed the pricing. So it used to be that the essential membership was $10 a month and the elite was $100 or $99 or whatever. And now the essential is $25. So I think, like, the elite is definitely a lot more than 4 times better than the essential.
Yeah.
And I think that even for these days, like, I found some stuff on essential that I thought was just flat out not good. That was more tournament things than cash things, and that was a few years ago. But yeah, I mean, I think the elite is really good, and I think you're almost certainly better off just paying for the elite than trying to do it on the cheap and do the essential. There might be a couple things, like, if you could really cherry pick the best stuff off of essential, maybe you spend a month doing that and then you move on to elite or something. But I'm not even sure how to tell you to cherry pick the best stuff off of essential. I've watched more tournament content on Run It Once than cash game content, but I know that there's a lot of really good stuff on Elite. And yeah, other than that, I think you gave him a lot of good advice, and enjoy yourself. Like, if you play, I mean, obviously winning is enjoyable, but play a game that you actually enjoy playing, which will probably be related to winning. But like, if you're finding it really stressful or frustrating in a way that you don't enjoy, I wouldn't keep beating your head against it just because, like, oh, I really want to be a winner, like such and such stake online. You're playing for fun, and I would keep that in mind.
Yep. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. And I hope the listeners got something out of it. And we should be back next week.
Yeah. And thanks to Chris and Carl for writing. Thank you, everyone else, for listening.
Take care.
Bye.
Devotion of a Carmelite, the fair passage of a bill, and who will sign us into law? I know you won't.